Tag from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, a show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And actually, this is a special week because we've got a third comic from New Jersey here with us this week. We've got our friend Ken Krantz, who's got a new comedy album out, Classy. So, welcome back in, and we understand this is your fifth time on the podcast.
That's what I just found out.
Yeah, we just looked it up. Ken's been on episode 137, where we covered Keegan-Michael Key and Olivia Rodrigo. He was actually at that live show. Episode 153, our Norm Macdonald tribute episode, where we watched Dirty Work. And episode 209, where we watched Tales from the Crypt, Bordello of Blood, with Dennis Miller.
Oh, boy.
And then lastly, episode 249, where we covered Caddyshack. So welcome back, Ken. Welcome. We'll send you your five-timers jacket in the mail.
That's right.
Yes. I appreciate it. And I heard I just beat out Kevin Israel to become the first.
That's right.
Yes. Good. Yes. So you're probably behind. You're behind our super producer, Frank Ablawi, and probably Dennis Perkins at this point, I think.
Oh, right. Dennis Perkins. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Because we have him on at the end of every season. So
that's true.
Israel's taking a beating these days, but that's for another podcast.
Oh, wow. Getting political off the top.
Wow.
That was that's pretty damn funny. I can't say that. I must admit.
Let's see, you also have a regular podcast, A Bit Too Much, right?
Yes.
Okay. What is that about? Just
it's
stuff
just
in general,
comics.
Or?
It's me and Carmelo Bon Jovi.
No relation, or
he thinks maybe there is, but it sounds like that's just wishful.
Sure.
Okay. God.
Well, it's just us sitting around bullshitting with our comedian friends.
All right. That sounds cool. So, if you're a comedy geek, and we have a lot of comedy geeks that listen to this podcast, check out the A Bit Too Much podcast. Mm-hmm. So this week, you wanted to do this movie, Broken Flowers, with Mr. Bill Murray. So, and you said it's your favorite Bill Murray movie. So,
I rewatched it last night.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
And I still
it's gone down in the rankings now?
No. I think it's not my favorite movie of his, but it's definitely one of my favorite performances of his.
Okay.
That would make sense because I actually did a little research, and according to Bill Murray, he himself said that he thinks this is his best performance ever. I think he said it on I don't know if you know the podcast Hot Ones.
Yes.
The interviewer asked him, what do you think is like, do you have one performance in your oeuvre where you think like, this is the best I'll ever do? And he's like, yeah, Broken Flowers. Like, that's the best thing I've ever done.
Wow.
Yeah. I do think it was a very different performance from him.
Yeah. It's very low key. It's a very restrained, and it's sort of, I mean, this was back in 2005. So he's on the heels of Lost in Translation. He did like Life Aquatic somewhere around this time, I think maybe a year or two beforehand. And yeah, it's a different sort of Bill Murray. It's certainly not like outrageous comedy Bill Murray.
No, it was like a left turn. Oh, yeah. But you also just reminded me that Life Aquatic is one of the best movies ever.
Life Aquatic is great. And
we haven't done that one yet, so maybe we'll have you back when it's time to do Life Aquatic. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe you'll be our Bill Murray guy, like Kevin Israel is our Ghostbusters guy.
That's true. Yeah, we don't have an official Bill Murray guy. We have an Eddie Murphy guy.
That's right.
But,
who's the Eddie Murphy guy?
Nigel Fullerton, a buddy of mine, a comic who's from New York, but he's out in L.A. right now. Yeah. Hey, Nigel, if you're listening.
And he does the Murphy Mondays podcast where he covers a different Bill Murray project every week.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. This is the problem when I try to say Bill Murray and Eddie Murphy in like too close to each other. I get their names mixed up and I'm saying one without thinking it.
Billy Murphy.
Oh, yeah. Billy Murphy, my favorite SNL cast member.
Yeah, so we're talking about Broken Flowers. Came out August 5th, 2005. Written and directed by Jim Jarmusch, who's best known for the films Dead Man with Johnny Depp and Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai with
Forrest Whitaker. Oh, that movie's so good. Did you ever see that?
I think it was a while ago. I remember a lot of my friends were really into that movie.
Forrest Whitaker plays the samurai.
Yeah, and has like the RZA from Wu-Tang Clan in it. Yes. Or that.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
This might have been my first Jim Jarmusch movie.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've seen any of his movies before. I mean, I'm aware of like Dead Man and some of his other things, but as far as I know, I don't think I've watched it.
He's like one of those love him or hate him directors, mm-hmm. and I usually don't go for his movies, but I loved this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
so what was it that made you specifically want to talk about this movie? Because like you have like a long history of this movie. Darren has seen it like once before. I was coming to it completely fresh. I'd never seen this one before. So
when this movie came out and I saw it for the first time, it just struck me as such a different kind of movie, mm-hmm. That it stayed with me. I've seen it. I hadn't watched it in years, but I've probably seen it 5 or 6 times.
Okay. But yeah, like I had seen it once before back when it came out in 2005. And I mean, full disclosure, Ken, I remember seeing this film with a bunch of friends of mine, and we were all psyched to see it because it's Bill Murray, and, you know, like John said, this came on the heels of Rushmore and Lost in Translation and Life Aquatic. Mm-hmm. Like he was,
like big hits.
Yeah, he was having, like, this renaissance
for and he was while. Also getting all this critical appreciation that was sort of newish, I would say.
Yeah, he was coming off an Oscar nomination for Lost in Translation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and
she should have won.
I agree.
Yeah, and like I remember watching this film with me and my buddies, and we're all excited. And then we came out maybe a little disappointed. We didn't quite know what to make of it. Like, I don't think anyone got it. And like I specifically remember one of my friends, Brian Bugno, him saying something like we were so excited to see Bill Murray in a Bill Murray film. We forgot that we're actually watching a Jim Jarmusch film. And I think that was it. I think we expected like Wes Anderson Bill Murray, and we got Jim Jarmusch Bill Murray, and that's a whole different flavor of Bill Murray.
That is true. That's a good point. Yeah.
I'll be honest why I wanted to watch it. So I've been trying to get my wife to watch it for a few years.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And she keeps telling me it sounds like some art house bullshit movie and she's got no interest. But when John asked me what movie I wanted to cover, I knew if I told her, hey, I got to watch this movie for a podcast, will you watch it with me? She would.
Oh,
she didn't say like only if it's for the SNL nerds.
When she found out it was for you guys, then she was like, well, that seals it.
Right.
So we watched it last night, and her opinion didn't change. Like, she turned to me afterwards and was like, you just made me sit through 2 hours of some art house bullshit.
That's basically how I kind of felt about it the first time I saw it. But mm-hmm. after watching it again for this podcast, you know, older, somewhat wiser, I appreciated it a little bit more. Like, I think I understand what they were going for. Like, I caught some symbolism I didn't catch the first time around. I was like, oh, okay. I warmed up to it a little bit more than I did back then. So, yeah.
It's funny. I liked it. After watching it last night, I liked it even better than the last time. Like, every time I watch it, I feel like I understand it more. Mm. Like, the older I get, I feel like I understand it more.
See, that's cool. I like it when a movie grows on you over the years and you see things in it that you didn't see before. And yeah, I certainly have movies like that I revisit a lot over the years. And it is fascinating to see how your opinions can change. I got into a conversation with this person on Blue Sky the other day, and it was one of those memes going around. It's like, you know, post a movie you've seen more than 6 times, and like hard mode, no MCU, no Lord of the Rings, no Star Wars. And I was just like, most of the movies I love, I've seen more than 6 times, man. That's not that's not an exceptional number of times for me to see a movie if I like it.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, well, doesn't it get old for you? Doesn't it? Aren't you doing it by rote? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to a showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm rewatching a movie.
Yeah. And like you find new things that you missed the first time. And the performances are still great. In some instances, the music is still. That's the one thing I'll say about the movie. I did like the soundtrack.
Soundtrack was, it was mostly Ethiopian jazz, but.
Yeah. Like somebody.
But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, some of these songs, like, oh, this song's kind of cool. Like, one of them I know, I think Nas sampled for, like, that song he did with, like, Damian Marley or something like that. It was, like, with some good stuff in there. Like, oh, this soundtrack is kind of kicking.
So we should also say, I mean, this movie, killer cast.
The cast is unreal, right?
I'm watching the opening credits because, like, these days, like, if it's a movie I haven't seen before, I'm usually not even going to watch the trailer beforehand so I can just come to the as fresh as possible and be naturally surprised. So we got Bill Murray, Jeffrey Wright, Sharon Stone, Jessica Lange, Frances Conroy, Julie Delpy, Chloe Sevigny, Christopher McDonald. I'm probably forgetting a few people, too. It's wild. So many.
Oh, Tilda Swinton.
Oh, and Tilda Swinton. Yeah, I forgot to write down her name. Yeah.
But still, stacked cast.
Yeah. Stacked cast.
It's such like so like. Do you tell everyone what the we could talk about what the plot was, right?
Yeah, we tend to like cover the plot just in a general thing, and you know talk about stuff that we noticed. I mean, like it starts out where we got like a letter. We're following a letter, and it's in this pink envelope, so it's very easy to follow through the apparatus of the U.S. Postal Service because you know this is back in 2005 when the Postal Service still worked well.
Oh, boy.
Remember those days?
Good days.
Good times. And it reaches the Bill Murray's character, Don Johnston, with a T. And he's watching the movie The Private Life of Don Juan from 1934 with Douglas Fairbanks. And that has some sort of resonance to the story we're about to tell. And as we join Bill Murray here. He's being left by his latest girlfriend, played by Julie Delpy. And she even helpfully says, like, oh, it's not like I'm your mistress, but you're not even married.
that was cold.
Yeah. So she's kind of like, I gotta get out of this relationship for a while to kind of find myself, figure out what I want. And, you know, bit of an age gap there. Probably he's got probably a good 20 years on her, I would guess. So
I'd say that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and then he kind of goes back to, he like lies down, watches him. He looks kind of not super affected. I don't know. It's interesting with this performance Bill Murray gives, because it is very understated and low key. So like you kind of see he is hurt by it, but he's really kind of keeping his emotions kind of at bay.
Yeah, he's like almost numb. He's not reacting.
He spends a lot of the beginning of the movie just sitting on the couch, like literally just staring at a wall.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We find out over the course of the film, he's like made his money in computers. So he's not, doesn't really have to work anymore. I don't think he has a day job anymore. He's got a nice house.
Yeah.
And so he's not wanting for much, but he apparently has had a long romantic history, I would say.
Yeah, he gets around. That dick gets wet.
Isn't he?
Classy, Darren.
Classy. Ken Kranz.
Nice tie-in. like Julie Delpy calls him an aging Don Juan.
Yeah.
While he's sitting there watching Don Juan.
His name is Don Johnston. So very on the nose. We're not really hiding our symbolism.
It's on full display.
It's like, you know, maybe if Jim Jarmusch was like sitting next to us, elbowing us in the ribs, going, get it.
he's woken up by a call from his neighbor, Winston, played by Jeffrey Wright. And Winston needs some help with his computer, so he just goes over there to his neighbor's house. Winston has a wife and kids, And you know, they're all nice kids, and the wife is mm-hmm. lovely. And then he helps Winston access the site. He's easy to get into. And we learn that Winston is like he's big into mysteries. He likes solving mysteries. He's big into Sherlock Holmes and whatnot.
And he's a crime novelist too. He's an Ethiopian crime novelist. And that kind of plays into it because his research skills come into play.
Yeah. And like we see him like marveling at the internet. It's like, wow, mm-hmm. everything is all the information at your fingertips. It's amazing, this new internet thing. It's
crazy. In 2005, he's saying this.
Yeah, I know.
This internet thing, it's going to be big.
Yeah. Yeah, get a Hotmail account and everything.
So Don opens up the letter in the pink envelope, and it's a typewritten letter, unsigned, and it basically says, like, hey, it's been almost 20 years since we last saw each other. I need to let you know that you have a son, and the son is kind of out on the road, and I think he wants to meet you. So mm-hmm. you may be getting a visit from the son. There's no signature, there's no return address, and the postmark is too faint to read.
Right.
So the game's afoot.
Now, first off, I'm not getting why whoever wrote the letter didn't bother to sign it. Do you have any theories on that, Ken? Because you've seen this movie a lot, so.
I think it was done by someone who, I mean, she says, you and I got, you were, the last time we spent together, I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I never told you because our time had ended.
Right.
So she raised this kid all on her own.
Right. She decided and to raise I it think on her
she
own.
Didn't, yeah. I guess she didn't feel like she had to engage, like, you know, say who it was. I think she didn't. I think she wanted that part of her life behind her.
Mm.
And... or maybe she was doing it. I mean, the whole thing about the movie, the entire movie is so ambiguous that you don't know exactly. It's the first movie, it's the first road movie I've ever seen where at the end you don't have any more information than you did at the beginning.
Yeah, it is.
So I mean, you don't even know if it's real. Like maybe it's somebody playing a joke on them.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I think that's like the main thing that kind of like the first time I saw it kind of rubbed me the wrong way where I mean we'll get to the end, but yeah, like the fact that it ends so ambiguously and the mystery doesn't get solved, like that's when me and all my friends were like, what the fuck? What happened? I did a little research and I think the more I thought about it, I was like, all right, well, if they didn't give an answer as to who, you know, what happens if it's so ambiguously, then maybe that wasn't the point of the movie. So they didn't
that's sort of what I came to watching it again last night.
Yeah. I mean, according to Wikipedia, what I found, Jim Jarmusch saying that the film was about yearning for something that you're missing and not necessarily being able to define what it is.
Yes. Oh my God. This is the exact conversation I had with my wife last night. Because she asked me, she was like, explain to me why you like it.
Uh-huh.
And I told her it's because this guy goes on this journey because he realizes there's something missing, but he doesn't even know exactly what it is. And he doesn't even know if finding it is going to change him or change anything. And it's really just about like this, I hate using the word journey. But it's really just about this like journey.
Use the word journey any way you want it.
Yeah. Don't stop believing.
No, it's cause I say that's I feel like women always talk about their journeys.
Right. These broads, mm-hmm. right guys?
Yes. Chicks. Chicks and their journeys. Am I right, guys?
Hey.
So I felt like the whole point was just him getting off the couch, like literally getting off the couch and going to see what was out there to see if it would fulfill him.
So just the fact that he was doing something and it didn't necessarily matter what he was doing.
No, it's he knew there was something missing. And then he was like, maybe it's a son. Maybe it's a kid that I never knew I had.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that will make, you know, maybe that will make me feel whatever.
Feel whole.
Connected,
feel
or whole. Grounded.
Yeah, yeah. I was losing patience with this movie a bit early on because it is such a slow, deliberate pace.
Mm-hmm.
And like I have a note here. I'm like, we're 20 minutes in and the plot still hasn't started. Get on the road already. Because I knew it was a road movie and he was like revisiting old girlfriends and all that. And so I was just like, yeah, okay, let's get this going. This movie's like an hour 45.
Yeah.
Why are we wasting all this time before we're going on the road? And yeah, so, yeah, maybe I was a little impatient.
Yeah.
Full disclosure.
Sorry.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say full disclosure. Nobody I've ever recommended this movie to has liked it.
thanks for bringing it to our attention, Jeff.
I keep swinging away, though. It's like a numbers game, you know? Like, eventually I'm going to find something. Like, oh, I get what they were going for.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, it, like, went up and down in places. So, yeah, I went on a bit of a journey with this movie.
But, I mean, the movie does kind of move at a slowish pace. I mean, there is one point where he's trying to decide. Like, at first, when he finds out that he has a kid somewhere, he thinks it's somebody playing a prank on him. But then Winston, his neighbor, just keeps on egging him on to check it out and do it. And that, I think at one point, he's contemplating whether to go or not. And it's literally just him in his living room, in the dark, listening to Marvin Gaye. And not saying anything, and the camera kind of stays on him for like, it feels like forever, but it's like almost like a minute or two of like just Bill Murray not saying anything, just sitting in the dark, listening to Marvin Gaye.
Because, you know, it's so funny because my wife always makes me put on the subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
So reading the Marvin Gaye lyrics, Marvin Gaye is singing about being lonely.
Mm. Oh. Okay.
So I think it was saying like he's got this, even though he's had all these women and, you know, he's like this aging playboy that he, you know, at the end of the day, this dude's alone on the couch in the dark. And
like what has it all brought him? Yeah. Okay. I can see that.
All right, yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
And Winston sees it too. Like, his neighbor sees it. His neighbor puts together his whole itinerary, right? Like,
he's
like, I booked the airlines. I got the rental cars.
Yeah.
You have to do this. I think it was part him wanting to solve the mystery, but it was also part, I love my friend and I want to get him out of this rut that he's in.
Out of this funk. Yeah, Winston says to Don, he's like, okay, you know, you should make a list of all the possible people this letter could have been from. And so Don makes a list of his girlfriends from 20 years ago for Winston. Winston then does the research. He finds all their current whereabouts. Mm. And some of them have married, some of them. And he says, like, you know, this one died in a car accident 5 years back.
Yeah, there was five total and one of them died.
Yeah, and... But so Winston plans out this entire cross-country trip, and he has like a dossier about all four exes, and he's like, plan this all out. He's like, you know, you're going to fly to here, you're going to rent a car here, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And because the letter came on pink stationery in a pink envelope, he says, you're going to bring pink flowers to each of them. Oh. And then you can kind of feel them out to see maybe who sent you this letter.
Look for clues. Maybe there's a pink typewriter.
Yeah. And if you find the typewriter, we could forensically match the letter to the typewriter.
Forensically.
You know, that's the thing you can do. You can determine if a letter came from a particular typewriter.
That's true. So, yeah. See. I mean, it's wild that he did all this for him. Like, he like, oh, I booked you some hotels and rented you a car and... You know, printed out MapQuest directions, like the whole nine. Yeah,
because 2005.
Because 2005.
So at this point in my notes, I have, this is like if High Fidelity was really boring. So I'm really digging the movie at this point.
Oh boy.
I say 30 minutes in and Bill Murray has yet to get on the road. And then finally about 30 minutes in, we see him get on a plane.
Here we go. Now we're off.
But I'm like, yes, okay, finally, we're getting going. And, you know, because he's checking out four exes, we know it's not going to be like the first one that he meets.
No.
So it's like, you know, we're going to have quirky meetings with the first three, and then it's probably going to be the fourth one. That's sort of what I'm expecting as we go. So,
right.
So the first one he goes to is Laura Daniels, who is formerly Laura Miller. And he goes to her house, and her daughter Lola answers the door.
Right.
Lola is short for Lolita.
Again, oh my.
Very on the nose.
Hoo boy.
And she's, I mean, okay, obviously the daughter's supposed to be younger than 19 or 20. I don't think they ever say how old the daughter is.
They don't ever, but clearly a teenage daughter.
Right.
Clearly a teenager, yeah. And the actress, I didn't write down the actress's name, but yeah, she looks very, very young.
She does. I had to make sure she, like, see what how old she was.
Yeah.
When the next scene happens and it turns, she was 21.
She was of age.
Yes, yeah, so I'm not. I don't feel creepy now. So.
Yeah, we're not going to be put on a list.
Yeah. Yes, Chris Hansen is going to bust down our door.
and we find out. So his old girlfriend Laura is not home yet. So it's just Don sitting there with Lolita.
Oh boy.
And Lita leaves the room to answer the phone. Then she comes back in the room later, still on the phone, completely nude.
Jesus.
And completely
totally naked, like more than naked Eddie. Like she's not wearing a bag.
Yeah.
She no. Was,
I think wow. We were talking about naked Eddie before we started recording.
It's okay.
Do we want to explain naked Eddie?
You got to hit record the second I get on.
I guess so.
That's we're all
missing,
my gold.
We're missing gold. Do we want to explain naked Eddie or just leave that as an oblique reference for
a couple years? We'll leave that as a oblique reference.
Okay.
Yeah, listeners, if you want to know about Naked Eddie, you know, reach out to us.
Google it.
Google it.
Google Naked Eddie and just, yes. See what the results are and then guess yes. Who do we're it, talking about.
Do it at work.
Do it at work, yeah.
Right. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine, yeah.
But yeah, like when I remember the first time when she came out, like me and all my friends were like, oh, what? Whoa, yeah. Wow.
It is weird when like a movie startles you with like nudity when you're not expecting nudity. You're just like, oh, hey, okay, that's the thing
was,
that's happening.
It was so out of left field.
Yeah, yeah. It is. And at that point, Don is like, okay, maybe I should wait for Laura outside.
Yeah.
I think
this would be
a good thing for me to do.
It's like, I'm not getting arrested today.
Yeah, no, yeah. I actually like his reaction. It makes you like, okay, I could keep rooting for this guy.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's not so much of a Lothario. He's like, I'm going to nail my old girlfriend's young daughter. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So eventually Laura pulls up in the car. It's Sharon Stone. And
she's super happy to see her.
Yeah, yeah. And he ends up having dinner with them, spending the evening. She's a professional closet organizer. She was married to a NASCAR driver, but he died at the track.
Oh.
And this is when we find out that Don made his money in computers. And at this point, I'm wondering why Don is just like hinting around at it. I'm just like, why doesn't he even just say like, hey, did you write me a letter?
I wonder that through the whole movie too.
Yeah,
especially with the last encounter.
Yeah, because like it seems like with each one of his ex girlfriends, he's just feeling them out, but he never like just hey, did you write me a letter?
Yeah,
that seems like a good opening, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he wanted to like broach it. I don't know. Maybe to be more sensitive or broach it easily, or maybe not. Ask him around the kid, or I don't know. It was
or maybe he wants them to bring it up. He's
because Winston is telling him just look for clues and report back.
Yeah.
So it's like I feel like he took those instructions
too literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's just so passive at times.
Yeah,
it's very strange.
Yeah, I mean, we see like pink things around the house. There's like a pink phone, cell phone, and there's like
a bedazzled phone.
Yeah, so there's like a few pink things here and there. So like maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah, and Don ends up spending the night with Laura. I mean, they seem to be like waking up in the same bed together. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming they got together again for old time's sake, something like that.
With the Pound Town, classy Ken Kranz.
Classy Ken Kranz. Now available wherever you get your comedy albums. So yeah, he hasn't found out a whole lot, but he had a little walk down memory lane, I guess.
Yeah, ain't nothing wrong with that.
So next he goes to Dora, who is played by Frances Conroy. She's probably best known for what, 6 Feet Under? I would say.
I would say so. Yeah.
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 So, and she's now in real estate. Her business card is pink. So we each old girlfriend who's got like some hint of pink in her life here.
Yeah, little pink things here and there. A little fun fact. So yeah. So while, I mean, in the movie, we see Don kind of flying back and forth through all these towns. They never mention the name of the towns or anything like that.
Yeah, well, they never say where he's going. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, I mean, this is all like, you know, in real life, they only shot like around the New York, northern New Jersey area because when Jim Jarmusch approached Bill Murray to be in this film, he said he'd do it under the condition that they would shoot everything only an hour away from his house in Hudson Valley, New York.
I mean, respect.
That's what you got to do to get Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, and Jim Jarmusch agreed to that. So all the scenes in this film, they were either shot in New York or northern New Jersey.
Yeah. And apparently, like, all the airport scenes were shot at the Newark airport. All the cars that we see Bill Murray driving around in, they all have, like, New Jersey stickers on the windshields, even though he's supposed to be like at various parts in the country, like, you know, far enough away to fly. So he's not really supposed to be that close. But yeah, everything is shot.
Maybe he was flying from Teterboro to Trenton.
Yeah.
think about that.
Who knows? That's something just for you New Jersey locals.
Hey, Jersey strong.
So yeah, so Dora's husband Ron gets home, played by Christopher McDonald.
Shooter McGavin.
Yep. I mean, I know him as Lieutenant Castillo from Star Trek: The Next Generation. But that's
I only know him as Shooter McGavin.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I recognize that most people know him as Shooter McGavin, but he'll always be Lieutenant Castillo from Yesterday's Enterprise to me.
Oh, aren't you fancy? Ooh, look who's
going back in time on the Enterprise C with Tasha Yar. Okay.
Wow.
Scott, you know what I'm talking about.
I understood none of that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I don't expect you to. I'm not asking you to.
Nerd!
Look, he prevented a decades-long war with the Klingons, all right? Show the man some right, goddamn
respect.
I know
respect. What Klingons I know.
Yeah, there okay. You go. Okay, so, yeah, Don ends up staying for dinner with them and talking. Like, Ron seems friendly enough at first. Yeah.
It's the tensest dinner you've ever. It's so uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
Because Frances Conroy, you can tell she's sort of still light. Like she, you could tell there's maybe some unresolved feelings there on her end.
Yeah.
But it's also real confusing. No one ever really understands why Bill Murray's there.
No, because again,
he just shows up with flowers. He's like, I just thought I would check in.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I was in the neighborhood. I thought I'd say hi. I think that's
neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been in touch with any of these women in the last 20-odd years. So.
No, not at all. I mean, I did think that was interesting. That was the one thing I caught on the second time watching it, where, like, as the movie goes on, the women he goes to visit, they're less and less, you know, friendly to him or want to see him. Like, Sharon Stone and the first woman he sees, he's really happy to see him. He's like, hey, it's you. Frances Conroy, a little less so. The next woman, a little less so, until we get to the end where she's like straight up hostile to him. Like, what do you?
That's true. That's true. I wasn't really thinking of that, but that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He probably was like, this road trip is awesome. Like after the first, he was like, I just banged her in stone.
Yeah.
And this is only the first one.
Ooh, wait, like, this is going great.
They're all going to want it.
But like, yeah, you know, at one point, the husband, Ron, he pulls out like an old photo of Dora and she's like sort of hippie-ish. And he's like, hey, I bet this is a blast from the past. And then like when Ron leaves the table for a minute, Don's like, I took this photo of you, didn't I? And yeah, so she's like, so yeah, like you guys said, there are some unresolved feelings there, I think.
Yeah, like
yeah, and she's giving him weird glances through the whole dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Don asked if they have kids. He said Ron says he wanted to, but Dora didn't, so they just never had kids. And you know, Don says he never got married, had kids, and yeah, then it's just super quiet.
But she says it's vague. She says she never had Ron's kids.
Yeah,
she doesn't say I don't have kids. She's like, oh, I never had kids with Ron.
Yeah.
So it's purposely vague.
Yeah, it's very oblique. And like honestly,
a lot of this movie could be solved with follow-up questions, but
like several times I was like, why don't you like ask them if they sent you a letter? Ask them this, ask them that. I was like, that's your way in. And like even when like in the last girlfriend, when he's talking with the daughter Lola, he says like, oh, do you have any brothers and sisters? So he's like starting to hint around. And she's like, oh, no. So
no, she doesn't. She says, why? Do you think I should have a brother?
Oh,
nobody ever comes out and says no. He never actually seems to get any information. He never leaves with more information than he had.
Okay, this is interesting. I didn't maybe pick up on that as much as I should have. So. Mm. Yeah, maybe I should give this a second watch and then I could pick up on more of this stuff.
Yeah,
so
see?
So nobody's giving him a straight answer. Okay. All right. So it's sort of like an anti-mystery.
Yeah.
I like it at this point, like after his awkward dinner with Dora and Ron, he's calling back to Winston and he at one point says like, look, you know, why didn't you rent me a better car? I'm a stalker in a Taurus. And I'm like, well, why don't you just change your car then? I haven't rented cars that many times, but even I know you can like upgrade.
Yeah.
You have money, dude.
You got computer money.
Yeah. You're talking about driving a Porsche, man. Go get your Porsche, man.
There are very subtle jokes. There are very subtle jokes through it that have me laughing.
I mean, I'm a stalker and a Taurus is a very funny line.
Yes.
I mean, I did really like that. That was one of the funnier moments in the movie.
There you go.
But also, did you see him attempting to eat Francis Conroy's dinner?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I don't think I made a note of that. What?
It just looked like a big cube of fish.
Uh-huh.
With
like carrots.
way too many carrots. And he's trying to choke these carrots down.
Uh-huh.
And he's like visibly trying to not gag.
Oh my God.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
I think I missed that. I think I was busy taking notes. So, okay. I need to watch this movie with a Ken Kranz commentary, really.
Yeah.
That's what I need.
It didn't help my wife any. All the commentary in the world couldn't have made her give a fuck about this film.
Oh boy.
Maybe we should bring your wife on to get her commentary.
She'll just come down here and tell you exactly what she told me. Art house bullshit.
Art
disguised as an indie film.
So we're on to girlfriend number three, who we find out from like a sign out front of her office is Dr. Carmen Markowski, animal communicator.
Talk to the animals.
Yeah. We got a Dr. Doolittle thing going on here. So, yeah, Don goes in. Chloe Sevigny is playing the receptionist. I don't know if the receptionist ever gets a name. Or if she did, I didn't catch
it. No, I don't remember catching it.
I think somebody called her Cleo at some point.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. Unless Cleo was one of the dogs.
Oh, Britt. Yeah. Could have been.
I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of talking to dogs in this scene. And his ex, Carmen, is played by Jessica Lange.
Yeah.
And let's see, the pink hint we have here, she's wearing, like, pink pants. So, like, obviously all these women have, like, at least a little bit of an affinity for pink.
Yeah.
And she's not, like, an animal psychologist. She says she reads animals' minds, and she tells their own.
She's a communicator.
She's a communicator.
Doesn't read. Bill Murray kept saying, so wait, so you read their minds? And she keeps saying, I keep telling you I'm a communicator.
So we find out that Carmen, she's got a 16-year-old daughter, and she's also kind of, yeah, a little more hostile to Don. And she's like, why are you asking me all these questions about my life? I don't really know anything about yours. Why are you showing up out of the blue like this? She's just maybe just on the edge of hostile, but she's like a little confused, I would say.
Yeah, because like I know like Don says, hey, maybe we can get together, have some coffee and talk. And she's like, no, that wouldn't be a good idea.
Yeah.
Or do maybe you want to get some drinks? Like, no, I don't want to do that. Like she's rebuffing him at every angle.
Yeah, he asked if she wanted dinner. She said, I don't eat.
Yeah. Food, yuck.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, setting healthy boundaries. I mean, and even when he's getting into his car to leave, the receptionist, Chloe Sevigny, brings out the pink flowers that he brought. So yeah. She doesn't even want the flowers from him. So, yeah.
Take a hike.
Not going well. I mean, yeah. You know, we've gone from like sleeping with Sharon Stone to Jessica Lange wanting nothing to do with
it. Did you hear the story she told?
Refresh my memory of the story.
Her dog, Winston, she had this dog. She was a successful lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
She had this dog, Winston, that was her whole life because all she did was work, and she would come home to the dog. And when the dog died, she suddenly found that she had this ability to communicate with animals.
Yeah.
And she ends up writing 3 books about communicating with animals. She talks to, I mean, the whole thing sounds so wacky. And
yeah,
like she for sure doesn't communicate with animals.
Yeah.
Like she writes, she has a bunch of books written. Like she's unbelievably successful at this nonsense.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's all a scam. See what she's doing.
So, okay. So now we're finally at girlfriend number 4, Penny, played by Tilda Swinton. She's like in this really isolated area. He actually gets lost on the way to her house.
Yeah.
Has to get directions from locals. And when he sees her, she's just, what the fuck do you want, Donnie?
Yeah, like she's out in the sticks. It looks like almost like a double wide or something.
Yeah.
And like when he pulls up, there's like 2 kind of country biker dudes like working on bikes and stuff like that. So they're, I don't know if they're like her boyfriend or what, but there's like 2 male friends are giving, you know, looking Don up and down. Like, who's this dude in a suit? Like, what's he want? And, but yeah, like he knocks on the door, Penny comes out. Tilda Swinton doesn't even look like. It's like a Tilda Swinton.
Yeah. No. If you'd showed this to me cold and said, who is that actress? I never would have guessed it was Tilda Swinton. Yeah. She's got like this bright red hair and she's, you know, done up.
Like very trendy. They're making her look trashy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Very, very trailer park. And he asks if she has a son. He actually like asks the actual question and, I'm like, at this point, I write in my notes, lead with the letter, asshole. I'm losing a little patience with Bill Murray by this point. And we also see at one point, he glances out to the yard and we see like a discarded pink typewriter just sitting out in the yard. That's like just been trashed.
Right. But when Don asks her, like, did she have a kid? She gets super upset, starts to cry and says, fuck you, Donnie, and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And the bikers run over and see what the problem is. And, you know, he ends up getting into a bit of an altercation with one of the bikers. And Pam, bam, gets punched in the face.
Yep.
Bow.
So, yeah, that could have gone better.
Could have gone better.
And, yeah, we next see Don. He's at a flower shop. He's getting more flowers. And you're like, well, why is he getting more flowers? He's seen all 4 of the ladies.
Yeah, I forgot about this part, actually, till last night.
And the the person working at the flower, the floral shop, she introduces herself as Sun Green, and she like offers to like patch up his eye because he's just like wearing sunglasses. He hasn't done anything for it. And she helps him out there. And then he takes the flowers and he goes to the cemetery of the woman who died in the car wreck 5 years before, Michelle Pepe. So interesting that her headstone doesn't have any years on it at all. I don't know if that's significant, but I noticed it.
That is strange that they did that. I don't know. Maybe they would date the movie somewhat, and they don't want to do. I don't know. But then they had MapQuest directions, so that already kind of dates it. All right, never mind.
Like, movies are just inevitably products of their time. I mean, if you're trying to be as general as possible, yeah, there's always going to be something like MapQuest that still pinpoints it to a certain moment in time.
It's true.
So Don finally decides to come back home, and we see him at the airport after he's arrived back, and he's waiting for his car, and he sees a kid waiting at the airport.
Wearing a tracksuit.
Yeah.
Because, like, in the beginning of the film, Don Johnson was wearing a lot of tracksuits in the beginning. So I think that was the movie's way of kind of planting that seed in your head. It's like, oh, it's a kid in the tracksuits. I wear tracksuits. That could be my kid.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Tracksuits are hereditary. It's just science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying what I think the guy, Jim Jarmusch, is trying to do here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So... yeah, so Don gets home. He's not really happy about the trip.
Yeah.
And he finds a note in his foyer from Sherry, the girl who the girlfriend who left him at the beginning of the film. And it's on pink paper. So, yeah, pink paper and red ink. And at this point, Don's like not believing anything. He's running through all this with Winston. He's like, well, maybe you wrote the letter.
Yeah, I think Winston says, oh, maybe Sherry wrote the letter, just the first letter, just to fuck with you.
Yeah.
But Don just thinks this whole thing was a bust and a waste of time. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, whatever. And then Winston leaves to go to work. And then Don sees that same kid from outside the airport, like kind of, he's outside the restaurant that Don's at with Winston, and the kid is just kind of looking around. He looks like he might be followed or something.
He's looking for something. He looks like he's searching for something.
Yeah, he's, and so Don goes outside. He introduces himself to the kid. Well, he doesn't. I don't think he really says like, "Hi, I'm Don," but he's like, "Hey, I think, you know, can I buy you a sandwich?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Hey, don't worry. I'm not gay. I'm not a creep. You just like, you look like a guy who could use a sandwich. So let me help you out." And the kid's like, "Well, I'm a vegetarian." And so Don goes back inside, he gets a sandwich for the kid, and they're eating just like outside the diner.
It's like in the alleyway.
Yeah. And
that's when Don sees like a pink ribbon tied to the kid's backpack.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Oh yeah, my mom did that for like good luck for me," or something like that. And then, you know, the kid asks Don about his eye. He says, "Oh, I ran into somebody's fist." And then they start talking, like how the kid's into philosophy. And he asks Don for some philosophical tips. And Don says, "Well, the past is gone. The future isn't here yet. So all there is this, the present."
That's it. Yeah. So? Which I'd say that's probably the closest this movie comes to an actual thesis, I would say.
Yes. Yeah. But also it's interesting because as I'm watching it, I'm thinking like this is him trying to dole out some fatherly advice to this dude who may or may not be his son.
Yeah.
And the kid even says, "Hey, I really like that. It's good because it's like you're not trying to give me some fatherly bullshit."
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, Bill Murray looks a little confused, like, "Oh, I thought that's what I was doing." And then Bill Murray just blurts out, like, "Hey, I know you think I'm your dad."
Yeah. That freaks the kid out immediately. Be like, "What are you talking about?" Like, as it would with anybody.
Yes. And the kid runs.
Yeah. I mean, the only way that wouldn't freak it out is if the kid was actually his son. But if you're not his son, that's a weird
right
out of the blue thing to say.
And the kid doesn't look like, and I was even thinking, like, this kid doesn't even look like him at all.
No, no, you're thinking like, oh, they didn't do a great job casting his son.
Because it's leading you to think it is his son.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Because we know that sort of very obviously isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's running after the kid. The kid gets away. And then we see another, like there's a VW bug that it's coming around. And there's another kid inside the VW bug. And he's just like staring out at Bill Murray. Doesn't say a word. And the kid is played by Bill Murray's real life son, Homer.
And it looks like him. So that's, because he's got the same hairline and everything. Mm-hmm, I never knew that he was played by his son.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, no dialogue. Yeah. Just
nope. No, they just lock eyes and then he drives away.
Yeah. And you see the kid in the car. He's also wearing a tracksuit.
Yes.
And he's playing Ethiopian jazz out of his car.
That I didn't see. I didn't even pick up on that. That he was playing the jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, then the camera just like goes back to Bill Murray, just standing in the middle of the street, mm-hmm. just kind of, processing everything that happens. And that's it. Then the film just ends.
Yeah. It's a real ambiguous ending. But I kind of like the ambiguity of the ending.
Yes.
I wasn't nuts about the movie overall, but mm-hmm. I thought the ending was really strong. Is that weird?
No, I think why people didn't like anybody I've ever told to watch that movie. And I've told people like Bill Murray's one of my favorite, if not my favorite actor ever since I was a little kid and saw Stripes. I can go watch mm-hmm. anything pretty much if he's in it. And I'll tell people who are big fans of his about that movie and they'll get back to me like, I hated that ending.
Mm.
Nobody's ever like, oh my God, I love that movie. I get it.
See,
seems to hate the ending the most.
I was down on the movie, but I was like, I like that ending though.
Yeah.
That ending's
cool. I love the ending. It's just like this dude goes on this whole road trip and returns with no more information than he had when he left.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't know if any of this is real, if there's a son out there.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't even know what this dude has learned.
And he spent the whole movie just kind of examining his past. But as he says at the end, the past is gone. The future isn't here yet, whatever it's going to be. So all there is the present. And so he's just left with his present.
Yeah.
He might make up his future.
Yeah, like I think with the ending, like you were saying, Ken, like the first time I saw it, I did have a problem with it just because it's just none of the questions were answered. So that just kind of left me with this feeling like, well, what was the point of this movie? Like if nothing, we set up all these things and none of it got resolved. But like the more I kind of sat with it and after watching it a second time, it's starting to come into picture like what the movie was really about and everything. Like one thing I noticed was it seems like when all the women he visited were kind of like could be like sections of his life, like him visiting Sharon Stone and his daughter, that kind of maybe represents his youth because she was happy to, there's like a lot of light in those scenes and the wild rebellious teenager coming out naked like you do in your youth. And then Frances Conroy scene, you see that she was a hippie. But then she kind of, turned into a yuppie, like we all do once we get older.
Join the establishment, man.
Exactly. And like as time goes on, we kind of, we get older and more hearted. And then the very last person, he visits is dead in the cemetery. So like it literally goes from like youth to death.
That's really interesting.
Circle of life.
Circle of life, man.
Tatership.
We're getting a Lion King up in here. That's really interesting. I didn't think of it in that way, but
okay. I think that's why. Like the second time I saw it, I kind of caught on all the things missed the first time.
We've got youth, adulthood, animal communicator.
Yeah. Well, this theory needs some
trailer park and death. The five stages of life.
Everyone knows animal communicating is one of the major ones.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was a perfect theory.
It's a perfect metaphor. It holds up beautifully.
It's halfway there. It's something there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ken, thanks for bringing this film to our attention. Yeah, like I said before, when you first mentioned it, I was like, oh, this film, I don't know. But, like, I do appreciate this film more now. I will say that. Like, I did get some things out of it I didn't get the first time.
Talking about it has made me appreciate it more, and I'm not, like, eager to see it again, but I'm more open to seeing it again. And maybe I'll get more of it the second time around.
I dust it off, like, every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, that seems good. Yeah.
I can do it again in 5 or 6 years.
I'll be ready in 5 or 6 years.
Who knows what it'll be by then.
Yeah. I'll be getting close to 60 by then. So, yeah, it might speak to me more.
You know what? It's funny you say that because, like, I noticed about getting older. So the first time I saw that movie 20 years ago, everybody in it looked super old to me. But now that I saw it at 50, I'm like, oh man, they all look so young. Like, look how young Sharon Stone looks. And
wow. Yeah. Time, man.
It's weird. I remember, I'm just going to say this cause it's a example I have ready. I mean, when I was a kid watching the Star Trek movies, like all the actors who were in like, their 40s or 50s, they look so old to me.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, oh man, Shatner's looking great in Star Trek too. Cause he's like 50.
Yeah.
He's like my age. And I'm like, he's looking good, man.
Yeah. It's like when you watch old episodes of Cheers and you find out that like Norm was like 37.
I know.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
You see the age of those Cheers guys.
But you know, like 1980s 37 was very different from today's 37.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
But yeah, I mean, I'm glad I finally saw this, even if it's not something that I like instantly loved or is like, oh, this is going into my top 10. I feel like it was a worthwhile watch.
Yeah, so. I would say
that.
So, yeah.
That is the best review I've gotten. I knew you guys were the right people to bring it to.
Okay. I mean, I was harsh on my Letterboxd review last night because the review I wrote last night, and this is at like 1 a.m, I just wrote, this movie could have been an email.
Yeah, it definitely moves at a slower pace, but it does have a lot in here that does kind of stay with you and you as you kind of like ruminate on it and think about it a little bit more.
You got to kind of meet this movie where it lives, you know? Yeah.
Yes.
You can't bring too many expectations to it. So.
Absolutely. And I guess that's it. Ken, any final thoughts on Broken Flowers?
No, I'm gonna keep championing this movie though. I don't care how many poor to mid reviews it gets.
you should just find a series of ex girlfriends to like go recommend this movie to.
I'm married to one of my ex girlfriends.
Nice. Sure. Well,
I mean, aren't all wives by definition an ex girlfriend?
Oh wow, never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Wow, you just blew my mind. Wow, this podcast makes you laugh then think.
That's right. Yeah, we're entertaining and educational. Well, I mean, thanks so much for doing this again, Ken.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Anything to plug, promote? You want to go with your socials, anything like that?
Ken Krantz Comic. And go listen to Classy wherever you listen to comedy albums.
Yeah, it's a second album, and you know, yeah, Ken's just like a monster on stage. He's terrific. Mm-hmm. He's a great stand-up. Go see him live.
That's nice of you to say. Thank
go
you.
Go to kenkrantz.com and check out his dates.
Yes.
So, and listen to the A Bit Too Much podcast.
Yes, absolutely. So, and I guess that's it for us. Guys, thanks for listening to the podcast as always. You could follow us on Blue Sky at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this on our YouTube page, non-productive.com. Donate to our Patreon. And as always, you could follow me, myself, and I on all my socials at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on my socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And and we'll be back next week. Estelle is returning with another live show. Olivia Rodrigo is the host and musical guest. So we will see you then. But until then,
Nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive Producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.